It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so this one is, what, November 7th?
I don't know.
I think so.
Something like that.
Yeah. All right. I want to tell you a story real quick that I just thought of. Okay. You decide if it's true or a lie. No. So, I've been watching a lot. I told you I subscribed to the Dropout TV streaming service now.
Okay.
That's College Humor's thing. And they have, I've been watching a lot of episodes of Actually.
Okay.
Which we have talked about before.
Yeah.
And they had one on an episode I watched, I think today, talking about Superman and the various forms of kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
And the issue was they said that among they listed various ones and what the powers would do, but the one they said was that pink kryptonite can make him permanently lose his powers.
Mm.
And this was not true. And the person got the point for saying there isn't one that can permanently lose his powers, although turns out there is, somebody wrote in later. But whatever. The point was that pink kryptonite doesn't, because pink kryptonite turns Superman gay. And this was a genuine storyline that they did.
Really?
Yes.
Ugh.
And guess how you could tell?
That he turned gay?
Yes.
I don't know.
He suddenly lost all interest in Lois, but became very interested in Jimmy Olsen. And, because of course, was very enthralled and complimentary towards some window treatments Jimmy Olsen had picked out.
Oh.
And so they talk about this and they're like, oh my God, that is offensive.
That's terrible.
What the hell? And the host is like, this is a thing we forget. Some, like, comics really, like, we talk about bad plot lines, but comics have done some really messed up. And somebody was like, when was this? And they're like, can we ask the producer? He's like, yeah, it's got to have been like the 50s or 60s or something like that. And they come back, 2003.
What?
Yes.
Ah.
And somebody at that point was like, holy crap, I said it was offensive before. Now it's really
I mean,
offensive.
I expected it was going to be like in the 80s, maybe 90s.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, I think, have forgotten how bad the 80s and 90s were for that kind of thing. But 2000.
Yes.
Oh, no, that's not right. I mean, it's not right anyway, but that's really not
I kind of get it, though. The 2000s and the 90s suffered from similar things. That was the time period where we finally were going to talk about things, like, openly, but we hadn't worked out how we were going to talk about them yet.
Yeah, that's a good
Prior
point.
To that,
that's
we would have just hinted at somebody being gay or something like that. Now we could be open about it and make even more fun of it. Yeah, that was shocking because I was like, oh, well, this has been around forever. It's got to be a long time back. And they're like, 2003. I'm like, oh, damn.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, so. Also, there's periwinkle kryptonite, which causes him to lose his inhibitions. Which, I mean, I'm not. The whole kryptonite thing's kind of dumb anyway, the way they do it. But who the fuck is like, we need periwinkle?
I don't know.
Like, that should have been so far down the list. Weird. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast with a catchphrase that is both unutterable by and indecipherable or inaudible to human ears and mouths. And we can't tell it's there, is what we're saying. The catchphrase is there, but it's not. It's like the ghost of a catchphrase. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 451.
Two.
One was last time. One was the Halloween episode?
Yes.
Okay.
We just did 449. minutes ago.
452. Oh, that's right, because the last one is 453. Okay. Sorry, 452,
yes.
Everybody.
Yes, so welcome to that.
Sorry.
But yeah, for us, it is October 17th, and we just did 449, so I'm not going to tell you how the show works.
17th? Or the 7th? Wait, what? No.
It is currently October 17th.
For them.
For us.
Oh, wait.
Today.
I'm thinking of.
Holy shit.
I'm already thinking of next month. Ah. Why do we do this to ourselves?
How did you get here?
I don't know. I'm already trying to think of what date it is to them.
I believe.
To the listener.
I believe for them it is November 7th.
7th. Okay.
Because the previous one was October 31st.
And then the next one's going to be November 14th. 14th. And then it's Thanksgiving after that.
And I'll be back. And so we will record for the 21st on the 21st. But then we will also record the one for the 28th because that's Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right. A double that.
And then we will come back on December 5th and record the one for December 5th. But then we will also record the one for December 12th because you got some shit to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Then.
Be around on December
and
12th.
Weirdly, then we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Christmas and New Year's, we're going to be fine. But
26th and the 2nd.
But until December 18th, I believe, 19th, until December 19th, we're either not recording or we're doubling. Every time.
It's going to be weird to not see you for a whole month.
Yeah, no, that's going to be bad.
That's not going to be fun.
And I will have not even been around for most of it, so that's going to be weird too.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'll be occupied with other things.
Yeah,
I'll just
but
be
I think,
passing my Thursdays without seeing you at
see,
all. And be
when,
like, oh, that's too
when
bad.
I travel and stuff, like I take the trip and then I'm eager to get home. And this is like 3 trips in a row. Mm. So I'm worried that like after the first one, I'm going to be like, oh, I want to go. No, you still got like another week, dude. But okay, then that's up. No, you still got a few more days and a whole other thing you're doing. But that being said, we've now bought all the tickets and made all the reservations and stuff. And I'm getting kind of excited.
Oh, cool. Good.
So that should be fun.
Yep.
Yeah, if you're just joining us, weird timing. But go back and listen to episode 449. It will explain how this show works. I'm not going to bother. I don't think I talked last time. I finished the main story of Assassin's Creed Origins. I think I did talk about that. I finally finished enough with it that I moved on to the first DLC.
Oh, yeah.
And it's pretty fun. And it's just different enough that I'm enjoying it.
Good.
Well, it was very good because I'm hitting that point. I'm hitting that point that I do in open world and sandbox games and stuff where I'm like, because that's the thing, I never get tired. I'm like, I love this game, I love this game, I love this game. I'm done with this game.
Mm.
And I can feel myself getting close to done with this game. So I'm trying to hurry up and finish these last bits. But I'm still enjoying it at this point. I just, like, in the back of my head, I can see it coming. And then I think Conan Exiles is going to be next. A little part of me kind of wants to do No Man's Sky.
Mm.
But I think it's going to be Conan Exiles because I already have it and it's there and you guys just played it. And I think it's probably going to be that.
Yeah, it's been a while since my wife went in, but she always liked it when she played. Always.
There might be a little bit of a break, though, because I'm not writing well.
Oh.
Becky James Lundstein, Queen of the Space Pirates, exclamation points, is not going well. Although, just the other day, I had some epiphanies that I think are going to help.
Good.
But there's a major inertia factor with that. So.
You seemed pretty confident before.
I was, and then I wrote all that 6,000 words of it, and then I was like, this isn't working. Let's go back.
No, I mean, before you even started,
you seemed
to think... I seem to recall you talking about it and saying, this is probably going to be a lot easier than Odd Wings was.
And I was wrong.
And it's proven, it looks to me, it's proven to be actually more difficult.
I think so. Part of it is there was tremendous catharsis in that original draft. And so going back and redoing is hard. Because in general, me going back and redoing. And so even though I'm taking a totally different tack, it feels like I'm redoing. I'm like, I already did this.
Yeah.
And yeah, and I don't know in the long run if it will be, but when I wrote Odd Wings, I just wrote until it was done. And I was like, phew, that wasn't that bad. And then I went back and was like, oh, it doesn't make any sense yet. And then it was hard.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Because I know the story and I've worked it out and I plotted it out, the hard part starts now.
Oh.
Because I know what's going to happen, therefore it already has to make
sense.
So
you don't get the easy fun part.
I don't have the part where I'm just like, oh, and then what do I think happened? Like, yeah. I know what happened.
Right.
I need to transition to that already.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But in the grand scheme, it may mean it takes one less draft or something. It may be easier. I don't know.
Okay.
And I didn't even think about the fact that, like I touched on before when I talked about this, such a different tone.
Yeah, you did talk about that.
And but I didn't even consider that originally, and that's huge.
That it would have an impact on how you write.
Yeah,
because
I don't know how to write. Like, I'm learning how to write over again because this is such a different tonal
fit.
And I didn't consider that component, because like what I wrote was fine for a first draft in a completely different tone. But I basically had to scrap the whole thing because that's not what this is supposed to be.
Right.
So, we'll see. I don't know. Where do you think your life will be at this point?
When this airs?
In 3 weeks.
Well, hopefully I'll be done reading the stuff that I was reading from Nathaniel Hawthorne. I'm taking notes.
God damn it.
As I read it, because I'm interested in the, because a lot of his stories have historical context, right? And
okay.
And some of it I don't know. So I look stuff up because I want to know, what's he talking about? What this thing that happened in history and this thing that happened. And I'm trying to put it all in an historical context. So there's like a timeline of all these stories and how they fit together.
I've been seriously contemplating purchasing a locker for my house just so I can shove you in it.
What do you mean? Because you think I'm a nerd?
Such a nerd.
Why?
Because you're taking notes while you're reading Nathaniel Hawthorne short stories.
Because it's interesting to me.
I didn't say it wasn't interesting to me. I'm saying if somebody were to make a hilarious metaphor about nerdiness, it might involve taking notes while reading Nathaniel Hawthorne short stories for fun.
Well, it might involve just reading Nathaniel Hawthorne short stories for fun.
But if you really wanted to ramp it up, taking notes.
Well, anyway, it is interesting to me. I've got these little, I've got the title, and I've got the year that it was published, and then I've got a summary of what is in the story, including important characters, and then I have a little bit about my thoughts on it. And it just helps me organize, because he writes about historical figures a lot. And if you don't know who they are, you can still get a lot out of the story because it's just a story, but you get so much more out of it if you know who he's talking about.
I think since it's all probably old enough that it's probably public domain, you should find a place to read it online that probably hyperlinks all that shit.
Well, I like the way I'm doing it, though. First of all, I like to read the stories in a book. That's why I have a book.
Yeah.
And then I like to put the book down and, you know, look some stuff up online or wherever else I can look it up, and then write the stuff out. And then I'll be able to, then when I'm done,
oh my God,
I'm going to put it all in chronological order. Like, this is when this story happens and this is when this story happens.
I'm founding a religion based entirely on the premise of giving you a wedgie. Speaking of things not related to that, Treasure Island.
Yeah. I actually liked it.
Is that your ride? Do you need to go?
Well, maybe it would have stopped.
On fire.
It would have stopped here.
So,
my
Treasure Island. Does Treasure, I'm pretty sure Treasure Island mentions, like specifically Long John Silver, mentions cannibalism at some point in there.
I don't remember, but that sounds right.
I'm trying to figure out if he specifically mentions the term long pig.
Not to my recollection. I've only heard that in relation, I've heard that mentioned, like in Sabrina they mentioned it. I think Supernatural used that terminology. That's the first time I ever heard it.
I don't remember a time when I didn't know that term.
Oh, really?
Yes.
No, I've only heard it recently.
And to be fair, I know stories where I've read them, but all the ones that I know it was in are fairly recent. But I remember that a long way back. Somebody just the other day at work made a comment about if you're in, I forget where, they're like, don't ever order the long pig. And I'm like, I'm never going to order the long pig anywhere. And they're like, you know that term? And I'm like, yeah, anybody who's read. And I'm like, it might be a Treasure Island. But I'm like, mostly any sort of pirate story should have come up.
Not to my recollection. I mean, I think I'd remember that too, because that's a term that I only first was introduced to it, I think, in the show Supernatural. Then I heard it in Sabrina, and whenever I see it now, I note it. Like, there's that term that I never heard until I was 45 years old.
I read it in a gaming story a while back, but I already knew what it was when I had read it then. No. For those of you who aren't putting together, that's a term for if you're eating people.
Yeah, long pig.
Yes, long pig. Because supposedly human meat tastes similar to pork.
Okay.
And I guess we're taller than pigs. I mean, I don't. Or at least longer than pigs. I don't know. But.
Yeah, I had never heard that until.
Where the fuck did I first learn that then? Because I've known that for a long time.
I don't think it's Treasure Island. It could be, and I just don't remember. But I think
I remember some sort of pirate thing. And because that's also where they explain barbecue, because the origins of that word, again, go back to legends of cannibalism. Of the term barbecue. I'm not saying the actual substance barbecue.
Long John Silver, as you're alluding to, was the cook. Was the cook on the ship.
Yeah.
But there's not a lot of talk about food in spite of that.
See, and that's the thing. I also am pretty confident I may not have ever read the book. Mm. So I'm like, but it seems weird yet still believable that it could have been in the Disney movie, because I definitely saw that.
I don't know.
Another pirate thing, because as a kid, all pirate things pretty much look like Treasure Island.
Oh, well. I mean, there's only one pirate book I've ever read, and that was Treasure Island. That was like just a couple years ago.
I don't know where it's from. Maybe I was just born with an innate understanding of cannibalism. I mean, that scans with me.
I mean, it doesn't have to be a pirate thing. I mean, long pig is...
No, just in general, I think, yeah, no, I could be a cannibal. Oh. No, but I specifically remember something, barbecue, all that bullshit. Like, that's in my head, so...
Okay, that's weird.
Maybe it's one of those things that, like, you all remember and it didn't happen, like Luke, I Am Your Father, or Welcome to Earth. I still hate myself for that one. I remember that one.
Yeah, I don't.
Never happened. Never happened. Yeah, no, sometimes if I just say I'll come up with a topic, but I didn't.
Have you read Scarlet Letter? Have you read that?
Yes, I think. Here's the deal about the Scarlet Letter.
Okay.
You know how it's a classic trope that I think has some basis in reality, that kids have to read a classic of literature and instead they watch the movie.
Sure.
And frequently it's a trope because they change things in the movie and then the kid gets it wrong because they based it on the movie.
Right.
In junior year of high school, American literature course, we had to read The Scarlet Letter. Every year, that was something you had to do. But we all knew that every year, right before the test on it, he would show us a movie of it that was beat for beat, line for line, the book.
Hmm.
And I think, because I was just that much of a nerd and a swat and things like that, a swat, it's a British term for nerd, basically. I think I still read the book, but I can't remember for sure because I also watched the movie. And yeah, it's exactly the same. I think that's how I knew too, because everybody was like, oh, it's the same, and I read the book and I'm like, holy shit, it is like the same. Like, you can absolutely take the test based on this movie. But yes, I did not,
and I don't know when I'm going to. Here's the thing about that. When I first decided I was going to, you know, read some Nathaniel Hawthorne, because I'd never had before,
yes,
I go to the bookstore, and they only have Scarlet Letter. They didn't even have House of Seven Gables. They didn't have anything else but the Scarlet Letter. In fact, the book I have that is a complete collection of his short stories is a used book. It's out of print. I don't know. One of the stories, a character is talking to another character and the N-word is used. And I don't know if that has something to do with it. Like, we're not going to, you know, publish that kind of stuff anymore.
I mean, I certainly don't remember that coming up in Scarlet Letter.
Well, and I haven't seen it in any other story except this one particular one. And it, and a character was, it's not like, Bram Stoker has a story where some of the characters are speaking in a racist way, but also the sort of third person narrator says some things that are racist.
Yeah.
Where in this story, it's only
and you know, most of Lovecraft.
Yeah. Yeah. In this story, it's only the characters that are saying racist things. It's not the narrator saying it. I don't know if that matters, but the rest of the stories so far that I've read in the collection, you know, there's nothing like that. But also I've noticed, and I'm sure anyone else would notice if they're paying attention, that pretty much all of the characters in all these stories are white. I mean, there's not really any black characters.
Not a lot.
Only time there's a black character in the story, the N-word comes up. So that should tell you something right there. But usually,
just in case you were confused about if they were black, it's like an alert they give you.
Well, see, that's the interesting thing is that in the narration of where the third person narrator is talking, he refers to this person as a Negro, just Negro. That's the word that's used. But then when the people are talking in colloquially or whatever, that's when the N-word comes.
And I think honestly, the difference there, I think, is largely a sort of fanciful status. I mean, in both cases, it's an object term, like that is the thing that is, and that's why they use it. And there's no, if you go back to that point, there is no concept of offensiveness. It's not an insult. It is literally an objectification. It's a table. It's a chair. Yes. It's an N-word. And the consideration that it's a human being and would have a name or could even just be called a person,
right?
Not a thing.
Right,
and I think in that context, the use of Negro is just sort of the highfalutin version of that.
Yeah.
So to me, in that context, I feel like they're very similar.
Yeah. Well, no, you're probably right about that.
And I mean, since then, both have taken quite the trip. And, you know, you'll note that we're sitting here saying the word Negro and then saying the word N-word. I mean, that says something right there.
Why are they both considered offensive?
In certain contexts, well, I mean, but not clearly not as much. That's what I'm saying. In the time period you're reading about, I would consider them just equivalent.
Oh.
But clearly they're not now
because
we're willing to say one and not the other. John Mulaney does a great bit about that, talking to some friend of his who is a little person and was talking about the use of the word midget, which is not appropriate now. Which is like, and I understand now that's the thing. But he's like, my friend was arguing. He's like, no, that is not. It's really bad. It's the equivalent of like saying the N-word. And he's like, absolutely, it is not. And I can prove it because in this conversation, we are saying the word midget, but we are saying the word N-word. If they were the same, one of these things would have changed.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I mean, as I was growing up, you know, you didn't say that word. I mean,
if someone
said it, and it didn't matter, it could have been an old person or whatever, they were chastised for it. You did not say that. And this was back in the 70s, and you were not allowed to say that word. And it was very offensive to everybody. And we didn't know any black people. No black people lived in our community.
Pretty much once the civil rights movement kicked in, it was people knew at that point.
Yeah. It's just,
just switched over to colored. And colored reigns to this day in some places.
Yeah,
by people who genuinely mean no harm and are just that clueless about it.
Yeah, I don't know.
And you got to educate them in a lot of cases.
It was just black people. That's what people just used.
Yeah.
They just used the word black when I was growing up. But yeah, if anyone ever used
you can still do the good objectifying because is it a black person or it's a black.
Oh.
That's what you can get too, frequently. It's or the blacks is the same thing, and you can,
yeah, maybe
do that with just about anybody.
Maybe. But you know, it didn't come up very often because everybody was white where I came from, so.
Yeah, in high school, I think out of the 1,300 kids in my school, 4 of them were black.
Well, there was even, people would even be object to someone's, you know, saying things like those people and things like that, you know, any type of.
Which is appropriate. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it was pretty, everyone was pretty sensitive to, look, stop treating these people with a different skin color than you, like they're not human beings. They're just human beings like you or me.
People are very big on, oh, back then it was a different time. And the truth is, it was a different time in that people would not call you out on it.
Yeah.
Like, throughout history, there have been plenty of people who thought slavery was horrible.
Well, that's right. I mean,
like, this is, it's people, not like we grew up and got wiser.
Yeah, people have told me before, when in the previous podcast we were talking about ancestry and finding out some of your ancestors had slaves or whatever. And I've talked to other people about this, and people have said to me, well, you know, that was a different time. And I say, so?
Yeah.
No, I had other ancestors who not only did not have slaves, but they openly objected to it.
Yes.
And if they could do that, so could these other ancestors. Yes. I mean, there's no.
And at the point we're talking about, lots of other countries had already abolished
slavery.
That's
right. That's exactly right.
So, we were not. No, some people like to say we were one of the early ones. We were absolutely not. We were one of the last.
And that's absolutely no excuse. And when you understand human behavior, I mean, I think people in general.
I'm not there yet.
No, I think people in general want to think that the farther back you go, the dumber people are, or the less empathetic they are. No, that's not true. So when you go back a certain distance in the past and people are treating each other horribly, you can hold them just as accountable as people now. They had empathy. They knew what they were doing, and they had to do some pretty serious mental gymnastics to either not, you know, get themselves to not feel bad about it, or to even in a sick way feel good about it. And that's not okay.
And there were different institutions in place.
Yeah.
And we all have our own. And this is going to sound weird. I am 100% behind the idea that words have power and labels are a thing and people should get to identify how they like and all that. But we are also living in an era where that has become a thing people are concerned about a lot more than it used to be. And I don't just mean the, hey, we need to stop objectifying the people. I mean, like, trans people have been around forever, but the obsession with making sure you get the pronouns right and making sure you don't forget it when you're told it, and or making sure you use the proper term, like, is a thing that is definitely of our age and is definitely a social pressure. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I actually approve of it. But the point is, that is something that is something that's becoming institutionalized today that definitely wasn't back then.
Yeah,
we have our own things.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not all bad and they're not all good. But something being institutionalized is not the same as people not realizing it's bad or something like that, or that everyone agreed with it.
Right.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying that some things weren't really difficult to stand up against.
Yep.
But people were doing it.
Yep.
So there you go. I mean, and not only that, but I hold myself to the same standard. I mean, if I notice that I'm equivocating, or I'm like, you know, sort of not having I'm not saying something when I should say something or whatever, I hold myself accountable to that. So I don't see why I shouldn't hold other people accountable in times when plenty of people were standing up so they could have stood up too.
And I understand that we are in an era now where hopefully men are held more accountable for their behavior towards women in public and in the workplace and things like that. And I understand that many men have grown up consciously or unconsciously thinking certain things were tolerated because they were, and now they're not. And that can be confusing to them. But also, as I've said before, whenever I hear about these allegations, I'm like, no, that makes sense that everybody involved would know that was wrong.
Right.
Like, that's not confusing. And it wasn't confusing in the 80s either. It was just tolerated.
Right.
So I understand that you're confused that the perspective has changed. The same shit has been wrong. It's just before everybody got away with it, so you didn't necessarily worry about it.
Yeah.
But you knew it was wrong then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you didn't, you were dumb. And you're still dumb.
Let me ask you
something. Your face looks weird.
So
I don't know who this person is I'm talking to, but I fucking hate him.
So you've heard it said, I'm sure, that men are visual and women are what's the other thing, not visual?
There's visual, there's auditory, and there's kinesthetic.
Okay, but there's this idea that men are visual, especially when it comes to sexual things.
I was going
to
say, I have heard this argument specifically as it relates to strippers and porn.
I guess. So what are your thoughts on that?
I don't buy it, any of it. Here's the thing on a lot of this. First of all, most of these things are bullshit. So many of these things that people say
are
based on weird 19th century some white dude said a thing, or they're based on pseudoscience like Evo Psych or things like that. Most of them. Some of them are a thing. Let me give you an example.
Okay. Because I've got a theory I want to share with you, and I want to see what you think.
It is, as far as I know, true that the average upper body strength of a man is greater than the average upper body strength of a woman. And just for funsies, we'll switch it the other direction. I believe it is also true and scientifically proven that the pain threshold of a woman is greater, on average, than the pain threshold of a man. Anyway, still bullshit, because all that means is that the strongest guy in the world and the strongest woman in the world, the guy probably has more upper body strength. Or the woman with the strongest pain threshold in the world and the guy with the strongest pain threshold in the world, the woman probably has... The average person is a random person on the graph. You cannot tell. Like, we're not the average man, and they're not the average woman. So me in relation to another woman means diddly squat.
No, that's true. But also, for a lot of those differences, I saw this thing recently where they were talking about the differences between men and women's brains or whatever.
Yeah. Spatial orientation is supposedly another one.
Okay. So let's take that for a second.
All right.
Spatial orientation and what are women supposed to be better at? Details.
Okay.
That's what they showed. Spatial orientation and details. Here's the thing. First of all, I think a lot of that research is not as clear-cut as people think. But let's assume for a second that it's true. How does that equal? Where do we get the logical step to, so men are going to be more engineers and women are going to be more nurses or whatever?
Absolutely.
That doesn't make any sense. Because here's the thing. Even if a man, if you have two men and they're both engineers, one guy, it might be better than the other guy at spatial stuff.
Yes.
But the guy who's worse at it is probably going to leverage other things he's good at to make up for the spatial problem, because that's what humans do.
Yes.
Human beings, if they're weak in an area, they use the thing they're strong in to leverage that so that they can, you know, in other words, some engineers are better at math than other engineers.
Yes.
Some engineers are better at this other thing than
some
engineers.
It's like the IQ game, and we've talked about it. There's like 20 different kinds of IQ.
None of these differences, even if you accept them, which some of them you shouldn't, but even if you did, none of them equal. There's going to be more male engineers than female engineers, or there are going to be more female teachers or social workers than male.
Yes.
It doesn't go there. The logic doesn't get you there.
It's shitty statistics for two reasons. One, the one I already brought up, the averaging thing. So the one guy is better at spatial orientation than the other guy. So then are we just assuming all women are going to be worse than the other guy? Or not?
Right, exactly.
Because they're aggregate statistics.
That's right.
The example I always like to use is body mass index. Body mass index, which is admittedly slightly better than weight height charts, but not by much, was never meant to be used for individuals. It was entirely meant to be used for aggregate populations.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes absolutely no fucking sense for individuals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that's a terrible thing. But then the other one, lurking variables. We did a study. Guess what? The study was probably all done using Americans.
Sure, exactly.
And we found overall, not 100%, but in the overall statistical significance, the men had better spatial orientation than the women. Surely that means it's in the genes. It couldn't possibly mean it is something in how they were raised or how they have been socialized or what they have consciously and unconsciously been raised to believe is important.
Yeah, this is another thing. They were showing some of the of this one study they were this these people were making reference to. First of all, it was old. Second of all, it was only Americans. Third of all, American college students, right? And they were saying women blindfolded had a hard time, had a harder time than men, sort of figuring out where things were, having an internal map of something. But then they said, but women did a much better job. If you put them in a room and you asked them later what was in the room, they could tell you. But the funny thing was, they showed the women. So do you remember? They showed the men, and the men were like, no, I don't remember what was in that room. And the women were like, yeah, I remember. And they were recounting everything in the room, and where it was.
Yep. Yep.
It's like, wait a minute. Yep. How does that? That's spatial, you idiots. And so that's the kind of thing they do with this gender
stuff.
I don't
even remember what it was today. I don't. And it bugged me. But the point is, there was some stuff. It may have been when I was reading the light therapy stuff. And they were talking about a study and the results it found. And I was like, oh, interesting. But then they're like, but there are these things to consider. And I don't remember what any of them were until we got down to the sample size was 42.
Oh, God.
I'm like, that never means anything.
That's almost never representative.
That is nothing. And that's assuming it was a random sample of 42, which it was not.
That's right. You'd have to be studying a very small group of
and it comes down to everything. Political polls.
For 42 to be
almost always, there's some major things you can assume about the people that would respond to that particular poll.
That's right.
If it's a phone poll, it's the people who actually answer their phone. It's the people who would actually bother to talk about
and,
it.
And
all
I don't,
sorts
I don't
of things.
Know if when you, in anthropology, took any classes on, like, methods of survey research or whatever.
Well, I just took a stats class, and then that just blew my mind. I'm like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
So this means very definitive things. That's interesting. Also, it doesn't mean most of what people think it means.
That's right. Well, for a while, sociology at the University of Iowa was very influential for their survey studies. Mm. So we have, you know, they have classes on it, and they talk about the guy who was really big with survey studies. And there are so many ways to screw up a survey.
Mm.
I mean, so many ways to ask the questions wrong, to pick the people wrong.
Yeah.
And when you look at polls, I mean, if you haven't thought about these things or learned about them, I mean, when I look at a poll, I mean, most of them are garbage.
Yeah.
A few of them aren't totally garbage, but they're not what they don't say what people think they say.
I work with psychometricians. Our company puts out a poll to measure or a survey to measure our engagement. And the first thing we're all thinking is, I would like to rewrite this survey. This survey is not going to tell them anything they want to know because of how it was written.
Well, here's the theory
and,
that I.
Oh,
came
no,
up
this
with.
Is a fun game for you, though.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the Likert scale?
Yes.
It is the
Likert
measure 1 to 5, 1 being strongly disagree.
Yeah.
It's those scales.
Yeah.
We're trying to gauge your feeling on something on a scale of something to something.
Sure.
It's called a Likert scale.
And there's one in the center, though. Isn't that usually the case? No.
This is the thing.
I mean, it changes things whether it is or isn't, that one in the middle.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, hugely.
And researchers will murder each other over this. I was taught fairly recently when I got into this game that you always want an even number of choices.
Well, it depends. It depends.
Let me tell them a thing. I just established that this is a huge controversy.
Okay.
Clearly, I'm going to explain to you both sides of it. Relax.
Depends.
I know. Otherwise, this wouldn't be an interesting story.
I'm just trying to get on your skin. I'm sorry.
I was taught you never have an odd number for two reasons. One, it is very seldom that people have genuinely absolute neutral opinion about something. And two, even if that's the case, it's useless data in terms of collating. because it's not making it move
sure.
in another direction.
For some things, yeah.
And I was like, of course, this makes brilliant sense. Wonderful. And then my wife was setting up a survey at work, and somebody from the research department in there was like, oh, you need to fix this Likert scale. You should always have one in the middle in case people feel neutral on the subject. And I found out this is a thing in research. People will come to blows over the odd or the even number in your Likert scale.
Mm.
And they all feel very strongly about it. And that's just the basics of how you're asking, let alone the results.
That's right. That's right. But it depends on what you're looking at. I mean, sometimes you want to know how many people are going to pick something in the middle.
Possibly.
And sometimes you don't care how they if they're neutral on it. Like, you can acknowledge that some people feel neutral on this, but what you really want to know is if they're forced to pick,
which way would they go?
So it's not an issue of you insisting there's no such thing as the middle. It's just an issue of you saying, I don't care about the middle. I want to see what people are going to pick if
most
they're forced.
Researchers don't say it depends. Most researchers believe in one or the other.
I didn't know that.
And they're very, very, I didn't either. It's crazy. And this was, I got this one out of Adam Ruins Everything. So you do a scientific study and it proves, or it doesn't prove, but the results are statistically significant that, you know, whatever one we just saw, bacon is good for you. Pooping 3 times a day makes you live longer. You know, all the thing. And you've got a statistically significant correlation and you did the study well. In theory, like, we know the stuff, and it's part of the process always is it has to be repeatable.
Yeah, duplicate it. Someone's got to do
and
it.
And here's the thing. There is nothing less sexy than duplicating results.
Right. So
but it still costs money.
Yeah.
And so nobody wants to do it, and nobody wants to fund it.
Right.
So almost everything doesn't. And what it turns out, because some people in the scientific community have finally been like, this is a thing. And so there are groups that are dedicated towards trying to recreate things. The vast majority of the time they can't.
That's
on
right.
like every study.
That's right.
And
if they try it all.
So this is all how people are reading statistics wrong and studies wrong.
Yeah.
But we're just a hop, skip, and a jump away from people who have said, you know what, then it's all meaningless.
Right.
None of it matters.
And that's not true
we
either.
We can ignore all of it.
But yes,
exactly.
People
and
do
this
do
is how climate change denial
people
happens.
Do that.
And anti-vax sentiment.
It's extremes all the time. It's like, well, this is absolutely, well, yeah, no, yeah. You've got to be nuanced when you look at that.
This is what it is. No more, no less.
Yeah, just, it's science literacy is what it
yeah.
is. But this,
I was getting flu shot the other day. And I said to them, I said, okay, do I call my HR? Because it was through work. And I said, do I call my HR or do I call Hy-Vee directly if this gives me autism?
Did they not think that was funny?
No, they thought it was hilarious. Oh, okay. One of them, I think, had a pretty, he's like, you call and you ask for Andy, who must have been some friend of his. But this other one's like, I'll even send you a link to this wonderful study that shows that there's no, I'm like, oh, you mean one of the hundreds of studies that show this? Or do you mean the one completely debunked study that suggested there was a connection?
A mild connection at that.
Yes. And it turned out to be a horrible study.
Yep. So this is the theory that I've come up with. So most of the belief that men are visually oriented when it comes to attraction or whatever, sex or whatever, and women are less so, or they are something else, auditorily or whatever.
Yeah.
Has to do with how much the statistics on, you know, men versus women enjoying pornography and men versus women enjoying, say, written erotica.
Mm-hmm.
So that the idea, the assertion is that statistically women tend to prefer like an erotic story and men tend to prefer visual porn.
I genuinely cannot come up with any theory that would make this make sense other than the one that men are very visual creatures. I cannot off the top of my head come up with.
Well, let me offer this theory anyway.
It's probably the same one I already got laid on me.
Well, and Jazz and I have talked about this quite a bit. And so coming from a sociological perspective and also a narrative perspective, my theory is that both men and women, what the arousal they receive from certain visual or stimulus, whether they're reading it or seeing it or whatever else, that the arousal comes from narrative in both cases.
Okay.
But a lot of people don't think that's true for men. They think they bypass the narrative. Women need to read it. They need a story. They need to warm up. But men don't need it. But I'm saying, yes, they do. But the thing is that our culture constantly tells men that every situation is a potential sexual situation. And every woman they see is a potential sexual partner, which means that for them, the narrative is always readily available. It's like right there. It's like the narrative is constant with them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas women are given contradictory messages about, you know, like how much sex should they be having or how should they express themselves sexually. So they don't, their narrative isn't readily available. So if they're going to reach that same level of arousal, they have to kind of work on the narrative. They have to find it. They have to, you know, figure it out. Whereas as men who buy this notion that sex is always available to them and sexual situations are always available to them, a ready-made narrative is just always at their fingertips. So they both need narrative. They both men and women are aroused by some kind of story that's getting them to that point, except it's more culturally available to a man immediately than to a woman in general. But there are going to be exceptions. Like for me, for example, I've never bought all that garbage. And so I find that when people talk about how women respond sexually to things, that I can relate to what they're saying when they talk about how things work mostly for women. And I don't understand when men are instantly aroused by something, or when they see a woman in a bar and they automatically are turned on by her and can go home and like sleep with her. I could never do that. I couldn't, because I don't know this person, right? Mm-hmm. The narrative isn't there for me to make those connections. And when I hear people talk about women's experiences, it's similar. So I think it's the same for men and women. I just think our culture is constantly feeding stories to men, so they always have those stories ready at all times. So as soon as they see a woman that they're attracted to, they immediately internalize this story about how, oh, she's dressed provocatively for me. You know, she's come here because she's looking mm-hmm. for sex and I'm going to be the guy. So it's easy for those stories, because that's what culture tells men, right? That's where men get this idea that if a girl smiles at him, that, you know, that means something, and that she now she owes him something, because that they're told those stories. So that's my theory, is that it's about the availability of the narrative. It's not about, both men and women need a narrative to get to arousal, but it's the cultural availability of the narrative that's different.
I will say, if you posit that both men and women need a narrative to achieve arousal, this seems like a good theory. I'm not sure I'm willing to buy that.
Okay.
Now, this is not me saying that one does and one doesn't. This is me saying I'm not sure it goes on any... I don't think it's universal in any direction. I think some people do, some people don't, some people do sometimes, some people don't. Because I'll tell you a secret, as somebody who consumes a great deal of visual pornography and written erotica, both of them have plenty of examples in which there is narrative and in which there is no narrative. You can have written erotica that has no narrative just as easily. Like, people just use words to describe some people fucking.
I guess that makes sense. You can do
now. There is a tendency nowadays to think that there's a story, but like if you go, especially if you go to fan fiction sites and things, there are literal tags called plot. What plot? Like, that's the joke and things like that. And also, very seldom do you see a lot of visual pornography that doesn't have a narrative attached in some form. If it's a video, there's obviously something, like the pizza guy showed up or something. And even if it's like from a magazine or whatever, it's frequently, this is so-and-so and these are her turn-ons. Or those magazines, as a kid who bought a bunch of them when he was too young to legally do it, and found them in the woods, because that's a thing, still don't understand why. Those are also full of these fake letters to the editor about these sexual escapades that happen, that guys also really love. So I just think it varies from person to person, and I don't even think the medium affects that. First off, in my theory, I think all of this is bullshit prior to, I'm going to say, really the advent of photography. I think if you're looking before then, I don't think you can find any evidence that women or men preferred their erotica in visual versus written form. Because we mostly had just pictures you could draw and things.
But then they start talking about how women would dress up for men and men didn't have to care so much about their hair and makeup and things.
Gets back to my other thing. One universal thing that has continued, and that is the live medium of pornography for life. People in front of you, like live people that you're like, I might or might not want to have sex with them or imagine them and things like that's there's various mediums, and one of them is just a person being there, and you know, maybe they're dancing or stripping or whatever, but like that one of the mediums is a live individual or individuals. Now, I think in general, since the advent of photography, and especially as time goes on, we have TV and things like this, in general, the society has moved to a much more visual thing. And in general, people don't necessarily read as much or things like that. But mostly, that's the... I think the visual mediums are the dominant mediums and the most socially visible mediums.
Yeah.
And the men, two things going for them that they always have had. One, they're in charge.
Yeah.
And two, they're totally allowed to express the fact that they are interested in sex.
Yeah. Everywhere.
Women,
though.
Yes.
No matter where they go.
Yes. And women, not so much. And so, if you're reading something, you don't. One of the great things about the invention of the Kindle is there was no longer a cover on your book. And when you were reading in the subway, people couldn't tell if you were reading vampire porn. Seriously. This was a huge, huge thing.
Vampire porn.
And just in general, I remember dating someone who read a lot of romance novels, and I was like, why the fuck would you do that? And then I read them and like, oh shit, cause it's porn. I thought it was just silly little lovey, like romance, like when you say a romance film or something, like a rom-com. No, this is just porn. But it's, we don't know cause there's not the naked people just visible right there. Mm-hmm. I think it's entirely a power dynamic. Both control of the social institutions and consequently the ability to express yourself as a sexual being when you're male and you're not allowed to when you're female. And the dressing is the same thing because the women are there to be looked at and to cause arousal. The men are not there to cause arousal.
Right.
The men are there to have arousal and then dump it on something.
Right. Well, and see, this is what I mean, how our culture makes the narrative so readily available, right, for men.
But I don't even think it has to be told in a narrative. I just view it as purely a power dynamic.
But that is
a
narrative.
The men have the power to express their sexuality.
But that is a narrative. The power dynamic is a narrative.
I mean, okay, but then all social issues, we're going to talk about them that way.
And I am. That's okay. Part of why I...
To me, since you were talking about the whole thing of some need to be aroused with narrative and somewhat, to me, this is a very different story.
No, I said that because that's the claim. The claim is that men have some kind of instant... Like it bypasses any aspect of their cultural or social or narrative producing mind. It goes right to their lizard brain or whatever. And so they can be immediately aroused. And what I'm saying is, nope, it goes through the same thing that it goes through for women and everybody. It's just, it's the speed of it based on how the culture either allows or doesn't allow the passage through that narrative part of the brain, you know, the cortex or whatever. Because, I mean, I don't know. I think you'd have to, like, scan a brain or something to see. But the claim is always that for men, you know, things bypass their higher functions and just goes right to the more primitive parts of their brain. And for women, it has to go through another route. And I just don't think that's true. I think that men can do it quicker because culture gives them all of these tools and these stories. I mean, people, when a woman is assaulted, people go so easily to, well, what were you doing and were you drinking? Yeah, and yeah, do yeah. you? They go so quickly to those things because that narrative is there, and they already accept the narrative that a woman doesn't have to give consent, or rather, it is consent to be drunk. It is consent to be wearing certain clothes. Well, what does that mean that these things signal consent? It means a narrative is being constructed by the things that she's doing, right? So men have this narrative available to them. So when the arousing stimulus goes through, it doesn't go just to their animal brain. It goes through their whole brain, just like with a woman, but it passes through so much more quickly because the whole narrative is already there. Whereas for a woman who's culturally, whose sexuality is mostly culturally constrained in our culture anyway, it's got to be built almost from scratch every single time. And so it's going to take a little bit longer for the stimulus that the same stimulus that would arouse a man fairly quickly, it'll take a little longer to arouse her.
I don't know that I buy that.
Well, and fair enough. It's just a theory. I have no idea.
Because I know, I mean, especially in this day and age, I know plenty of women who like visual porn and get aroused very quickly.
But again, it's a cultural thing. As the culture changes,
yes,
this argument that men are easier to arouse than women will go away because it'll be clear that that's not true.
But I don't even think it's true now or was true then, honestly. I believe it's that men were allowed to show or be open about the fact that they were aroused.
Well,
and that some of them were and expected in some cases, because you also get men who aren't into
that. Right. But
I think it's about expression. I don't think the cultural construct necessarily has anything to do with how quickly or intensely men or women get aroused by a given erotic medium.
I think that at least women that have been talked to in certain research and women that I've known and my own experience is that it's not that these women and men, in some cases like myself, it's not that they're getting aroused but don't feel like they can express it. The arousal just won't happen unless certain other things happen first. There's a process that's got to happen before.
See, and everything I've ever experienced or read on that, other than people making that assumption, is that it's not on gender lines at all.
And I don't, maybe it is, maybe it's not, because I'm starting with certain claims.
I haven't read these studies.
Well, and I...
Also, there becomes a thing...
I don't want to defend the studies either.
If you're told the only way you're supposed to do this is this way, then you can convince yourself of that. There are so many men in the world that have convinced themselves that strip clubs are sexy when they really are not. And nowadays, it's finally to the point where some men are like, wait, this is really kind of awful.
Well, but what is that, though? That's a story that you tell yourself, that you filter all of your experience through that story. And when you realize that what you're saying is this is really actually kind of awful, what's happening there is you're starting to realize that I'm not really looking at this as it is. Mm-hmm. I've got a story that I've constructed that I'm looking at. If I try to push the story aside and see a different story, because it's always a story, but I'm going to see a different narrative. I'm going to let the narrative be told by, not by what I'm coming in with, but by what I'm seeing. Like, I'm going to actually look at the woman's face while she's stripping and, you know, see what her face looks like, see if she's enjoying herself. You know, I'm going to look at the men who are here and see how they're reacting and what they're doing. And you start to, a different narrative starts to be built other than the one you went into the strip club with, that you habitually go into
absolutely
the strip club with.
But
now you have a story that's like, oh, this story is different, but also valid, maybe more valid because it's more closely tied to data that I'm actually gathering and seeing instead of what I'm bringing in. And so it starts to seem awful. So one narrative overtakes another narrative.
I mean, I agree with that. I feel like we've definitely strayed from the original point you were making using the term narrative.
Well,
I mean,
the basic idea is I'm talking on two levels, obviously. On one level, I'm saying, well, here's a theory I have about this observation that people make that I about a difference between men and women,
yeah,
that I also must agree. I'm not even sure if that's a valid observation.
I think we can both agree that modern socially measurable and viewable responses to erotica are at least in a large part based on socialization.
Yeah.
And a lot of that socialization is along specific gender lines up to this point.
Right.
That carries with it what is acceptable and not acceptable in terms of sexuality.
Which, not only do I agree with, but...
I'm sure I agree with the specific versions you're telling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the concept, I think we can both agree.
The theory I'm pushing is trying to disprove this notion of that men are biologically way and women are biologically that way.
Yes, yeah, which
and
very much agree.
And the methodology I'm using, this is, like I said, this is something that Jazz and I talk about a lot, is saying, well, what if we think about human behavior in terms of the narratives people construct to inform their behavior? Yes, we can think of human beings as just doing things on impulse, right? Mm. But there are so few things that human beings just do on impulse. Human beings organize their behavior according to interpretations of the world around them, according to beliefs, right? According to assessments of risk and all these other things. So stories are created, and it's these stories through which they interact with their world. There's very little that's just, I have an impulse and I do it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a narrative there, and if we assume that first, how much human behavior can we understand through the narratives that mediate between a person's subjective experience and their behavior? So that's the general theory that we're working with.
And to be honest, any concept that posits women react a certain way involving sex and men react a certain way involving sex that posits it as a biological thing, I fundamentally don't believe, unless you are talking about specific nerve impulses in the body relating to specific physical and physiological things. I don't believe in any. In the same reason that I believe gender is a social construct, so why the fuck would I believe that sexuality wasn't also a social construct?
Well, right. So, but, I mean, you can do surveys and studies that show that men and women behave in different ways sexually in our culture, but... First of all, you have to ask, is it really finding that? Because sometimes only finding what it's looking for. But even if it is really finding that, that doesn't mean it's biological.
No,
it
never
could
does.
Could be culture. Well, yes, it never is.
Basically any study that finds women and men, it's essentially pretty much never actually biological.
Well, right, but and in those...
Especially if it's not a very measurable physical thing.
And for a lot of them, like these studies on spatial and detailed or whatever...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Questionable as they are, even if you could accept what they're saying, one of the things they want to conclude is that this explains why men pick different jobs than women, and it doesn't explain it.
At
never
best,
explains
it's
that.
Academic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which goes back to this is a fun full circle thing, but that Hannah Gadsby was talking about when she was talking about the anti-vax thing. Even if for a moment we assumed it was true that vaccines cause autism, which it's not. It's absolutely not. But if we assume for a moment that there is a chance vaccines could give you autism, which they can't, but let's just assume for a hypothetical for a second, the absolutely not true fact that they could, it's still worth it because autism isn't a fucking death sentence.
No, that's right.
Autism is neuroatypical behavior that is still perfectly functional and allows one to live a perfectly fulfilling and ambitious life like anybody else. You just... operate differently in how you deal with the world.
But you're not dead.
No, you're not dead, and you're not broken. You're not disabled.
Yeah, yeah,
you're not anything like that. You have a different perspective, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
On a neurochemical level. And what the fuck? And it's the same thing here. It's like, if you could prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that men, again, on average, had better spatial sense than women, on average... Cool. Okay.
Yeah, what does it mean? Does it mean that a man can't be nurturing or that a woman can't be aggressive or that a woman doesn't want a high-paying job? How
or
does any of that equal?
That a particular woman couldn't have really good spatial awareness.
That's right.
Or that a particular man couldn't have really shitty spatial awareness.
So that none of it is an excuse, like people try to make it, of the fact that we've got so many male engineers and so many female teachers, or that we've got so many men making more money than women.
Yeah, no.
It does not account for that.
No.
And it's
usually not scientists doing it. It's usually politicians doing it.
Yes, that's well, and journalists too. It's like, what is wrong with you? But what always happens when you see these people talking about gender differences, trying to say that science says that the genders are different and that explains why there's a pay gap. They always, without fail, they talk to an evolutionary psychologist.
Yep.
They always do.
Evo psych.
They always do.
That's some bullshit.
And those people are idiots.
Someday I'm going to craft this great joke I have about, did you ever notice that women are different from men and also other women and also other men are all different? I have not put together the joke, but someday I'm going to do the classic women and men are different, but it's going to be women and men are different from each other and other women and other men and people. But I can't put together the joke yet. But there's one there, and when I do, it's going to be the funniest joke that was ever told.
I don't know why anybody talks to those evolutionary psychologists.
We are, because they're so handsome.
This was the one I was watching. I saw this video, and this one was a woman.
She was still super handsome. we
like,
are
what
super
are you talking
over time
about, lady?
And didn't even get a question in. So this is it for now. By the time you're hearing this, William and I won't have seen each other for a couple of weeks and we will be sad, but you, whatever, just keep listening. We'll have more. You can't tell the difference to you. We're just constantly here once a week, just invading your dreams, giving you sexy narratives. There's nothing visual here, people. These are auditory narratives. So let your hindbrain be short circuit. I forgot what we were talking about.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay. Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.